始まるざますよ。
行くでガンス。
ふんが。
まともに始めなさいよ。
This is Anime Diet Radio, episode number 26. I think we've already entered all kinds of uncharted territory, haven't we, guys?
Uncharted as in boldly going where no otaku has gone before and shouldn't.
That's right. We've already passed our quarter-life crisis. But anyway, we've got a great episode for you today. I'm your host, Michael Huang. Everybody introduce themselves.
Where are you from, Mike? You are messing up the order, and don't make me go there and hit you with the guitar!
Oh, I'm gonna have to take that threat very seriously. I'm gonna have to report that to the authorities, you know, Mr. Krauser.
I think we never should have introduced him to Detroit Metal City, Mike.
I know, I'm starting to really regret it now. Or actually, it's not even me. It's you, Jeremy. You're the one who brought it up in episode 24.
This is Krauser the second or the third. Well, which one ever it is from in Taipei doing his performance.
Right.
I fear we will never get him back to normal.
I made Raymond this morning for breakfast. That's a chomping sound that you were hearing. That was his skull.
Oh, dear.
Well, anyhow, this is Jeremy, who is still somewhat in his right mind, coming from Redondo Beach.
Yep, and we're actually doing something unusual in that we're recording this on a weekday. We normally record these on Sunday evenings, just a little peek into the inner world and the inner sanctum of Anime Diet Radio. And so, all we have really is just the usual lineup. We've got three news items for you today, lo and behold. A much bigger number, not the number two, but one more than two, three.
Just like the number of DMC band members. And since this is a weekday, Krauser can go all out.
Indeed he can.
Is it possible for a DMC to do a cover of the song Three is the Magic Number, the Schoolhouse Rock song, would that be? I don't know, would that work? Just
the magic
well, off the Mac Dragon, three the magic number. Yeah, you know.
It's all the same. It's all rock and roll, right? I mean, actually, the thing is that if you compare DMC's music to real heavy metal or real, like, death metal especially, it actually comes off as being pretty tame, musically speaking.
What really? Did you say? Tame? Don't make me come over there and bite your head off.
Yes, tame. Krauser, you don't play hard and fast enough. You go listen to Napalm Death, buddy. They'll school you.
Yeah, I don't know. Somewhere along the line, I have a feeling Krauser raped Napalm Death, so.
Yeah, unfortunately, he probably did. In either case, we do have three news items, and we're going to talk in our roundtable about the upcoming fall 2008 season. I think the first, preview of a season I ever did was in spring 2007. I remember talking a long time ago about how I was going to watch Gurren Lagann. Well, actually, that's finally happening through the magic of $25 DVDs from Bandai. But in either case, we're going to talk about the upcoming season and what shows look interesting to us. And I'm sure Krauser will have at least a few more things to say about his band along the way.
Time to do the public rape! Come over here, women!
Yes, and so, boys and girls, why don't we go ahead and move on to the next section? Well, as you probably already heard in this last 4 minutes, as well as in the last episode, a certain someone in this triumvirate has gotten a little too much into Detroit Metal City. It's pretty much taken over not only his voice, but his blogging, including his vaunted response to certain flamers among us. And so, he, of course, may have mixed feelings, however, about the news item that we're about to talk about, which is that Detroit Metal City is starting to get Hollywood remake offers.
Yay.
Yes.
Nothing says happiness like anime being remade into Hollywood blockbusters.
Mm-hmm. It's happened to Speed Racer.
This is great. We're actually going to go to Hollywood. I hope to see all these trendy cafes and go drink coffee and eat with Aikawa-san. That would be so awesome, guys.
What happened to Mr. Krauser there, exactly?
Oh my god, I hate playing this guy. He's just so mean, and yesterday I just kicked the old guy off the stage. I felt bad. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done that. You know?
Jeremy, I think I find this guy a lot more annoying than Krauser. Why don't we beat it back into him? Why don't we...
How can you do that? I am a very good guy. Don't, please, don't do that. That's it! Both of you! Come over here! Well, I'm gonna go over here and stab both of you with the guitar!
I just had a blood omelet for breakfast this morning.
Well, I think we've beaten some sense back into him.
Well, as much as possible.
In either case, apparently, according to a newspaper in Japan, the Sports Hachi newspaper, apparently the film distributor of Detroit Metal City, which the live-action movie has been an enormous hit in Japan since it was released, has received more than one offer from Hollywood film production companies to remake Detroit Metal City. And so basically, they also have distribution agreements for Hong Kong and South Korea, and there are offers to distribute it in the U.S., the U.K., France, Germany, Taiwan, Australia, and Brazil.
Hollywood remake sucks ass.
And I think I'm going to have to agree with Krauser there, because most of the time, they really just don't seem to get it.
Come on! You guys don't like, you know, turning a really good storyline into a Hollywood blockbuster action film with lots of explosions and terrific writing and terrific casting and, you know, three-dimensional characters that are no way flat and lifeless compared to
the best writers in Hollywood. I ate them all. I have to have some trophy. Don't you know that?
That was probably why the Macaulay movies seems to have declined a lot in recent years. That makes a lot of sense now. He ate them all.
I ate them all.
Actually, I think this is an interesting trend that Hollywood has kind of realized that they pretty much mostly can only, within their own ranks, their own inbred ranks, create a lot of crap.
Yeah.
So they've basically been kind of outsourcing, so to speak, from Asian films and European films to get ideas for stories. I mean,
I noticed that recently, especially like horror films. Yeah,
especially. And I mean, just on the side of, you know, it's bad. And I mean, that's, we're mostly talking about movies there, but you know, it's bad when in the television industry, the United States television stations are touting the fact that they're doing a remake of a Japanese game show.
And I
forget the name of it. It's the one that...
I Survived the Japanese Game Show.
No, there's actually another one.
Oh.
Based on what is tantamount to Human Tetris. And I forget the name for it, but it's...
Human Tetris?
Yeah,
it's human public rape?
The same people that brought us Dog Eat Dog are putting this
Doggy
out there.
Doggy style?
Yeah, well, that too, but...
That's a logical leap from that, I think. So
Don't they do a doggy style all the time in Hollywood between actress and producers, just like anime industry? Whoops.
I bet they do. It's, the entertainment industry is pretty similar all around. They exist to exploit. So,
yeah. Totally.
I mean, and the thing with Detroit Metal City is that I just know they're going to go PC on it if Hollywood really gets its hooks on it, because I don't think like a lot of the rape jokes are going to survive. Like,
seriously. Oh, well, yeah. Granted. I don't think that translates at all to an American audience. Right. And I wonder, since I have not seen the Japanese live action movie, because you have to consider what we have seen thus far have been, to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, OVAs.
Right, they are. They're technically OVAs.
And so this isn't anything that actually even the animated series hasn't even been on Japanese television. So I don't know that perhaps that the Japanese version, the live action movie, that will be, definitely be more mainstream than the manga, will even have a strong connotation of those sort of things.
Right. If anything, I've heard is that it's the live action movie that's the main thing. It's like that it's been really spectacularly successful.
And, well, they play the same song as far as I can hear.
Yeah, the songs are exactly the same.
Actually. Oh, really?
Yeah, the songs are exactly the same. It's the same opening song, you know, except the full version with more lyrics. It's the same ending song. It's the same, like, that sweet little tune that plays at the end of the anime. It's the same song in the movie as well.
Okay.
But the last song on the soundtrack was all about fucking.
Oh, yeah, and you actually heard some of that at the end of the... In the trailer, actually, you heard.
And is he saying it in English though?
Yes, he
because,
is.
Because see, here's the point in that probably is that there was a really great commercial I won't ruin the punchline, but it was a German commercial.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah, family get into a car and it's grandma and mom and dad and the kids and. Or something that, you know.
Yeah.
And they get in there and this rap song playing, something like, you know, I want up you in the ass. And then just like, you know, and they're singing along with it. And at the end of the thing says, need to learn English? Come to
see that.
I've seen that.
I've seen that in Taiwan too.
Right. Yeah, it was very, very popular. So I wonder if it's kind of a similar sort of thing, like where some people will actually get what he's talking about.
Everybody in Asia know what fox means. It's what has this word.
It's the universal.
It's true. Yeah.
I believe it. But I don't know, though. I mean, there are some oddities. I mean, like, just the simple, you know, everybody that's probably listening to our show is sort of English.com, where they have all the really great Asian products from Southeast Asia, from Japan, from China, stuff like that, where it has, like, really horrible English on products and, like, T-shirts that say, like, Miss Urine Tester, USA. You know what I mean? It's like, nobody would wear that. And really, I hope.
My shirt actually says, fuck me. And the back says, fuck you.
Somehow I believe that, right?
I know. I actually believe that. I actually
with
believe.
And two U's.
Here's a big problem, too. When they say those swear words in English in a Japanese show, it's funny. Because it's English, it sounds like English.
Right.
You will certainly lose that altogether in an English language movie. That source of humor is going to be completely gone. Like, and where I think a lot of the humor really comes from, even the word rape is said in English. And it's almost kind of funny because it's, what was it? It's like, it basically sounds like lip, 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 lip. Like that, and you can't take it seriously when it's said like that.
Nice. Right. But we're going to Hollywood. It's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing.
Well, I mean, I think they've probably already got at least a partial cast list worked up for this. I mean, what do you guys think?
I'd love to meet these people. I can't wait to meet these people. They must be so great.
I can actually see certain actors fitting some of these roles. I mean, of course, we know that the original movie already has Gene Simmons in it.
Right, so, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Wow, but, Simmons. Awesome.
Yeah.
What's actually interesting is I haven't told you guys, but they are so far advanced in setting up the partial cast list that it actually does exist, and I just so happened to get my hands on it. Would you guys like to hear?
Jeremy, you're an insider a Hollywood insider. Wow.
Exactly.
You're even better connected than I thought.
Right. Who did I have to screw to get that, huh?
Exactly.
I went over there and screwed you in the ass! And I gave you the list.
All right.
Yeah.
So anyways, for those of you that aren't actually familiar, I think you should be at this point familiar with with the series that we're actually talking about, but Detroit Metal City is, like, as we said, currently an OVA in Japan. It is a manga. It is a live-action movie, and it's the story of Nagishi Soichi, who is basically a happy, kind character who loves Swedish pop and moves to the big city to pursue his dream of music, but instead ends up in a death metal band, singing songs about rape and killing and all this fun stuff. He becomes Johann Krauser II, is his alter ego. But for his part, I think Hollywood, from if this list is correct, is already slated to be played by Brad Pitt.
No. You gotta be kidding me.
No joke. Also, his love interest, the girl that he's in love with, Yuri Aikawa, who he has trouble confessing his love to in his normal personage, but can clearly tell her he wants to make rape love to her in a fashionable cafe. that character, Yuri Aikawa, is going to be played by none other than J-Lo.
This is already starting to get really freaky.
At least you'll get a nice piece of ass.
He could write a song about that.
Not to mention that their overzealous manager that basically talks about how wet that the concerts in which Krauser abuses the pig of capitalism on stage gets her, will be played none other. And I have to mention that their manager is also a very crass woman who likes to swear like a sailor, will be played none other than by Roseanne Barr.
Now that's perfect.
Now,
if you lose like 150 pounds, yeah.
So not to put any diminishing on these three actors' limelight, I think they will all be upstage by the character who wants to play, or that is going to play, Teramichi Nishida, the drummer for DMC, who is a curry-loving, overweight pervert of few words, according to Wikipedia. This will be played by none other than Jason Alexander of Seinfeld fame, George Costanza.
That's actually perfect. He really is.
I can see him doing
it. Now, as great as these all sound, there is one other actor that they have considered for a role in this movie, and they've actually tried to keep it top secret, so it was a little hard for me to get this information. But being the reputable and far-reaching news source that we are, I went to great lengths to find out who actually is going to play the...
Yeah, your ass is sore.
That's why it needs kissing all the time.
Yes. The pig of capitalism, who is the masochistic, middle-aged man who is abused on stage by the band, by Johann Krauser and the band's manager. Anybody basically who wants to abuse him can kind of be able to do that, including myself. So I did enjoy that. But nonetheless, that part is going to be played by none other than Kelsey Grammer.
Whoa. That is a coup.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. So, anyways, basically, you know, we bring this information to you so that you can just be excited about what Hollywood is going to do with another fine film from overseas.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'm going to get all the signatures. That is so good. And we can all drink in the same cafe together.
Well, with that, do you guys have any more thoughts on the DMC movie, or should we move along to our next news article?
I think we can probably move along, because that casting list in general is so horrible, I refuse to think about this subject any longer.
Come on, Mike, it's going to be great. Don't you love it?
Yeah, you'll be great if I smash all of them with a guitar, and if I rape all of them in public. And after that, I will rape Los Angeles, I will rape the...
Big Hollywood sign.
That too.
The Hollywood sign. The big Hollywood side. Anyway, why don't we go ahead and move on before we before Hollywood agents start coming after me with guns. So, all right.
Mm-hmm.
All of us. Yes, because somebody just raped fandom. And that's what we're going to be talking about right now. Everybody, of course, loves the mainstream media, or what everybody in the blogosphere calls the MSM. And a really recent example of that just shows the MSM's, you know, commitment to objectivity, fairness, fact-checking, and accuracy. It's a story on MSNBC about...
Misinformation Network.
Yes. We're going to get to that later. It's an article by Mr. Brian Alexander, MSNBC contributor. It's an article entitled "Anime Erotic Subculture Goes Mainstream." More Americans drawn to the, quote, moral-free zone, unquote, of cute sexual comics.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If you didn't need any more stereotypes about anime to fit it into, like, a title and a subtitle, well, there you have it.
Wait a second. I have always thought that anime is all about sex, 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 and fuck, 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 fuck. That's all I blog about anyways.
Well, in either case, Brian Alexander may have looked at your blog a little too much.
Yes. Yeah, it's really interesting. Obviously, there's a huge component of it, and that's one of the things we have to overcome with... yes, I said overcome. Okay? No jokes. That's one of the things we have to rise above... Okay. Wait, no, that doesn't work.
Come over with the ew.
Those yeah. One of those things we have to get past nowadays, ladies and gentlemen, with anime is the misperception that it's all tentacle love and porn, you know? Yeah. And I love how, like, this Mr. Alexander just drove us back into the stoned age of thinking about anime.
Yeah,
and it's not surprising, though, that he really took this angle, because if you actually do a little research on Mr. Brian Alexander, apparently his whole shtick for MSNBC.com, which apparently he's not, like, you know, reputable enough to get on real network television. He just writes on the internet, not like us. Apparently, though, he writes his whole shtick is writing about sex. He does, his whole shtick is America Unzip in search of sex and satisfaction. And, you know, apparently he couldn't find enough stuff here that he had to kind of, you know, go overseas and try to import some porn.
He can't get enough satisfaction
in
the States, so he had to get satisfaction on anime.
Yeah, I think that's probably why he had to mention the Hello Kitty vibrator in the very first sentence of his article.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows the first thing you think of when you think anime is you think Hello Kitty vibrators.
Yeah.
I know that's the number one seller at all conventions. It may be a high seller, mind you. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I know there's just, like, tons of booths out there selling, you know, various and sundry anime vibrators.
Available on JList.com.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, isn't that the first thing you turn on in the morning?
Oh,
I am not going to dignify that with a response, Mr. Ray. My solitary vices are nobody's business.
Okay, so you add that disclaimer. Yeah. Now it really sounds like real.
So are you going to say is Michael... Oh, no, it wasn't Michael Stipes. I'm sorry, it was another androgynous singer from the early 80s, who said, what a man does with his own Hello Kitty vibrator is his own business. Morrissey. It was definitely Morrissey.
Ah.
He was quoted as saying...
I think that's Hanson, George and Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys.
Yeah, Morrissey was actually quoted as saying, what a man does with his own penis is his own business, when asked if he was homosexual or not.
Yes.
Mike's response is, what a man does with his own Hello Kitty vibrator is just phone business.
And we're just going to have to leave it as I agree with that statement.
Moving along, though, I think we should talk about this article a bit because, you know, since he decided to try to rip anime a new one, and for anybody that has any common sense, horribly failed, but for those of us, the people out there that would be easily duped, we should, I think, turn him a favor and, I don't know, like, journalistically rape him Krauser style.
Let's start with all the inaccuracies that are in the article.
Yes, quite.
Let's start. Like, for instance, his definition of otaku, which he says is a Japanese word that has evolved from meaning techno geek to describing devoted fans who pore over Japanese animation and comics.
Right. And basically anybody with any knowledge of and any research of the Japanese language, and I mean this is such a common phrase that there's a lot of information out there would know that his estimation of this word is entirely incorrect and way off base.
Oh yeah. The word otaku is actually a fairly generic one. It doesn't actually refer to any particular hobby. You could be a military otaku or a gun otaku or anything like that.
Or vibrator otaku.
Or a vibrator otaku, indeed.
Yeah. The word otaku, though, is a word that is basically means your honorable house. It's a very formal word. It's used in honorific second person. And it's the kind of speech that an essayist named Akio Nakamori in his 1983 series, An Investigation of Otaku, coined this phrase and basically saying that this is how the person who is so wrapped up in any kind of hobby speaks because they have no social ability. And so the phrase, the word otaku became slang to kind of describe fans of anything that are so heavily involved in it that they lose all touch with any other sort of reality, in a sense, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, basically. It's just it's a slang term, and it does have a stigma, especially in Japan.
Yeah.
And I think he's... I think what I've heard actually is that the reason why he made that very specific like error that it meaning techno geek actually dates back to a very old article in Wired magazine, which I think was 1993 or 1994. That was probably the first mention of otaku in the Western press.
Mm. Wow, yeah. Like 15 years ago.
Yeah, and because it showed up in Wired, and it was in fact talking mainly about like computer geeks at that time. I think he probably just naturally assumed, it must mean that all otaku are computer geeks, and that's what it means.
Like but, you?
However, if he had simply used Wikipedia, he could have found, and I'm thinking a journalist that can't easily use Wikipedia doesn't exactly have a lot of journalistic integrity. Not to say Wikipedia is entirely correct all the time.
Right.
But I think it's a good basis to get some information, then you can do a little more research. So, yeah. Thus proving one of his early statements are very, very lacking in integrity.
But another error that he makes is what he defining lolicon. He calls it lolicom, a combination of Lolita and comic, rather than the very, very. And the funny thing is that he contradicts himself later on by calling it by its real, you know, full. Right. You know, spelled out as Lolita Complex, but the comic part is, you know, completely wrong in that one, and so it's really he has the enough. I guess he has enough, you know,
information to be dangerous.
Yeah, enough information to be dangerous, and he has enough charity to say that that doesn't necessarily mean everybody who's into loli and anime and manga is into like the real pedophilia. He does say that.
Right. Well, gosh, thank you very much, Mr. Alexander. Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah. F you very much.
Exactly.
He equates Gurren Lagann with the legend of Overfin. It was only one of them had tentacles, and I guess we don't know which one now, do we?
Yeah. I want to read the whole sentence. I think this whole sentence is really rich. But sexually suggestive and explicit anime like Gurren Lagann and Legend of the Overfiend is finding an eager audience of adult Americans who are drawn to the postmodern, almost post-human mashup of playful, blurry morality found in the genre.
Wow. Man, he just like picked a name out of a hat.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised he didn't say something like, I don't know, Kodomo no Obata.
Gundam 00!
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I actually just started watching Gurren Lagann. I've seen the first 5 episodes now, and I actually calling it suggestive is I guess it's a little bit fair. I mean, there's some fan service. Yoko is basically walking fan service. You know, she's got bouncy boobs. You know, it's Gynax. Come on.
There's a bikini. Come on. It's just a bikini.
Yeah.
Using it in comparison to Overfiend.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just horrible, okay?
Right.
Shame on you, Mr. Alexander. That is just sad. That is just sad, my friend.
Yeah, exactly. He's conflating just ordinary fan service with hentai. The really hardcore hentai, I might add.
It's a very slim percentage, honestly, of anime fans that are even interested in titles like Overfiend, to my knowledge, to people that I've talked with. And to say that people that are fans of Gurren Lagann would somehow be necessarily interested in Overfiend is a stretch by.
I think it's perfectly normal, like to like Gurren Lagann and Yoko, because if you go to the South Beach in Miami, that's all you see, basically. That's wrong, right? So basically, women wearing a bikini top by short shorts is wrong, right?
Yeah. Well, apparently it was wrong enough for I remember me and Matt were actually at the Shokotan concert at AX. And we were actually they told us initially that we were allowed to photograph, and so we took quite a lot of pictures of her cosplaying. But just before she came out in her Yoko costume, they told us to put the cameras away.
Oh, that's
took some like secret photos. Nobody would know, son.
I probably should have.
Because you can say, son, we're in California. Are you suggesting that we are actually more conservative than South Beach and Miami?
I think that was more about the rights to those images, because they know that those will probably sell.
Yeah,
but exactly. But I think there is one more point that I have to we need to make about Mr. Alexander's article. While we finish raping it over, I think that basically the. There's a comment where he talks about the conventions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When anime conventions are started. I love this. I don't know where he gets his sources are. I briefly link to the Lawrence Aang that he quotes. And I find it highly probable that this person was probably misquoted, as were other people in his article, which is another reason you just pour on the shame on Mr. Alexander. He states, when anime conventions started in the U.S. back in the mid-90s, the main demographic was mostly Asian college-age students, says 32-year-old otaku expert Lawrence Aang. Now, there's a couple problems with that statement. One is, I don't know how, like, what the percentage of Asian college-age male students were of conventions in the 90s, or even, like, I mean, honestly, I mean, you would consider the population, Asians in the population in the United States, small percentage, right?
Yep.
And you figure on a college campus, you know, just equally small. And you figure at these conventions, right? This was about this coming to the United States. So I would say by far it would just be logical that it would be mostly, you know, American, you know, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for here? Just white people. A bunch of white people that are interested in anime porn. Or, I mean...
Oh, the secret's out. Oh, no.
Yeah. But seriously, I mean, and I love this. He says 32-year-old otaku expert. How do you become an otaku expert? Do they have, like, a degree for that? Yes, I have my AA in otaku expertism. Yes.
Don't you know that there's the otaku university down under Tokyo, it's Akihabara? That must be it.
And Brian Alexander has his BS, as in bullshit, in journalism. So, you know, I mean, it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this article is just a shoddy attempt, and I wouldn't even call it that. It is basically a rag not worthy of me wiping my ass on. And that's my final.
And I love the quasi-academic stuff near the end here. It's about... Aang believes the expanding popularity of otaku is a positive reaction to problems of global alienation, mass culture's assault on individual identity, changed gender roles, and the lack of satisfactory grand narratives.
See, now, this is where he just goes completely off his rocker, because he doesn't even stay with his original, like, thesis of what basically anime is. He goes into delving into a whole nother realm, a whole nother concern, a whole nother question, this bigger global issue that he doesn't even bother to explain or give details or defend in any way. And that's pretty much what most of this article is. It's just a rambling of a very, very sad individual.
Indeed.
With nothing better to do. Indeed. Not that we know anything about that.
Now that we are done raping this article, why don't we go ahead and move on to our final, relatively brief news item. Finally, we're going to go back to that character that we all love, that all of modern-day otakudom just simply adores, and that is, of course, Haruhi Suzumiya. Who knows when the second season of that is really going to be coming from Kyoto Animation, with them being busy, apparently, adapting every single key property there is. And so, basically, I think Haruhi has gotten fed up. I think as a demigoddess, she's dissatisfied with the lack of exposure that she's been getting, and so she's apparently been appearing in lots of other places instead. Apparently, according to Anime News Network, for the past month, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, of all places, has been airing a commercial for extra-strength Tylenol rapid-release pain relievers. Yes, that's right. Extra-strength Tylenol rapid-release pain relievers. That includes a brief shot of a Haruhi Suzumiya
poster.
But
you have your PMS!
Oh, wow. And so, you know, is that really what Haruhi Suzumiya is all about? Is about her, like, PMSing and having these crazy things coming out of her psyche? Is that really what it's all about? Is that maybe the subtle message in her showing up in these...
I think it's more like, if you have to deal with her, you're going to need an awful lot of extra strength Tylenol rapid-release pain relievers.
Good point.
And I think some otaku feminist is going to start flaming that station.
I know. It's apparently, in this 30-second commercial, the likeness has appeared only roughly around the 18-second mark. And this is not the first time Haruhi has been sighted in very strange places all over the world. Apparently, there's in Belarusian chocolate waffles, a protest sign in the Gaza Strip by Palestinian protesters. And
yay, all the Palestinians love Haruhi.
Yes.
You know, it's in the Quran. Right under Muhammad, you know, that you should follow the prophet Haruhi.
Yeah.
Because she has awesome abilities to make things happen.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, just try saying that in front of an actual, like, devout Muslim, that, you know, there is no God but Haruhi, and Gion is our prophet.
Oh, he'll terrorize your ass for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, I'm not sure why. I think the original, like, sign said something like, stop killing the children, but it has a smiling Haruhi on it with, I think, doing the whole V sign or something like that. And it's like,
wow. Yeah, stop killing the children.
And finally, a Chinese pamphlet about the Beijing Olympics. And I actually saw that one, too. And it looked like a really horrible knockoff.
Wait a minute. Does that Haruhi hold a gun against a Tibetan monk?
No. I think she's actually looking, standing next to a Kyon lookalike. No.
Mao Zedong? You mean Mao Zedong?
Well, I guess that would work in a certain kind of propagandistic sense, except I don't believe a lot of Chinese people like the Japanese. So it's an interesting way of co-opting their property. And yeah, in either case, however, the most interesting sighting, and this was actually officially approved, so this is official merchandise by the light novel creators, is on, I think I actually want to let Ray mention this, where this appears
on tissue boxes.
Ooh.
On tissue boxes. So this means that you won't be reaching the tissue some of the time. You will reach for tissue all the time.
I'm not sure I get that. Like, does it mean like Haruhi causes, like, you know, sinus pressure and post nasal drip and
Between your crotch.
Oh, I see. Oh, pressure and drip. Oh.
Or for the somewhat more chaste virgins among you, you know, that fountain of blood coming from your nose, maybe.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm glad you said your nose, because anything else would have just really sent me reeling.
You didn't really think I was going to go there, did you?
Not really, but...
You're the Christian faggot. Yes, you're not going to go there at all.
Yes, I am, and I'm proud of it, too. I get my rocks off in other ways.
Trinitarian theology, perhaps.
Oh, man. I can't say anymore.
I think we shall all praise the Lord and submit to his authority. So here's what I say. Pray, 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 pray.
Wow.
Pray. Pray.
The levels of blasphemy in this podcast are unbefore unknowned. I don't know. I think we should move on before anybody gets struck down.
I'm telling people to pray. I'm telling people to pray and to worship.
Yes, let's go ahead and move on to our roundtable discussion. All right.
We're back to the roundtable. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to bookwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
And finally, we have our usual roundtable section where we talk about the latest anime either we've watched or what's going to be coming up in the coming season. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing today. We're going to be talking about the upcoming fall 2008 season, which begins in October, about a week and a half from now. And so there's going to be lots of new shows this time around, because usually it's either during the spring or the fall season when the Japanese studios start releasing what they think are going to be their significant or their big shows. And at least to me, though I think some may disagree with me, I actually think there's going to be a lot of interesting choices this coming fall that go beyond, at least in some cases, some of the typical norm that we see, especially with the whole glut of eroge adaptations that have been around recently. I know a couple of you kind of differ with me on that, right?
I think this season looks very boring, except that show with a little girl with two eggs on her chest.
Two. And how big were those eggs, Ray? Extra large?
Do you want me to go there? Do you want me to go there?
Grade A.
Do you want me to look at these characters? Do you want me to say anything about more about that?
You know, actually, on second thought, no, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this season, although it has some potentially promising series, there's nothing that's been like really astounding me per se, but I will talk about a few things when, of course, my turn rolls around.
Okay. Well, in either case, I've been elected to begin today's discussion with my two main picks, the shows that I'm most likely going to be blogging about in the coming fall season. And it's kind of interesting because they all both happen to be sequels of things I blogged about before, namely last year. And the first one, of course, is EF, A Tale of Melodies. Not Memories, but Melodies. It is the follow-up, and supposedly, from what I've heard, the prequel to EF, A Tale of Memories, which I voted provisionally at the time to be the best show of 2007.
I thought this was the crossover where like it was Nodame and EF together.
But actually, that does sort of, in an odd way, make sense because, you know, when we found last year in EF, A Tale of Memories, memory was, in fact, like the big motif and the big theme. And so one stands to reason that EF, A Tale of Melodies, is going to have music at the center of its motifs. And, I mean, that was one of the things I really appreciated about the show last year was its very good use of motif, consistent themes, and, you know, artistic flair. And it was definitely kind of a show aimed at people who probably like artsy stuff, people like me, basically, who get off on analysis and like to make the creators cream with delight because of how incredibly pretentious.
Mike, did you just use the words get off and cream with delight in the same sentence? Because, you know, I thought we were moving on past this, like, sophomoric humor. I'm really shocked at you, Mike, for making such a comment.
It is so horrible of you. Let's go to the cafe and have some coffee. Calm down there.
Do I have to hit you again to turn you into Krauser, Ray?
Please don't.
And Krauser has left the building!
Oh, I'm going to show him one day. But in either case, but yes, there is a certain kind of temptation that those of us who really enjoy certain kinds of shows face, in which it's really easy to probably to overanalyze and to overappreciate certain elements of certain shows. And
you overanalyze? Not you, Mike. I mean, seriously, Ray, would you really ever expect that Mike would be the one to ever overanalyze?
Oh my God, that comes as a shock to me.
That's totally after all, I mean, for him. It's like I would have never in a million years. You're the last person I would ever think would overanalyze anything.
Oh my God, dude. Like, everything about you is about Eva. This is going to be about Eva again.
Well, in a way, the directorial style that I saw in EF A Tale of Memories was very Anno-like. It had a lot of the very quick cuts, a lot of flashing text, and a lot of strange camera angles, and in this particular case, Photoshop filters. Lots of weird colors going around. The colors actually do seem to mean something, and the colors actually contribute to the mood of the show, which is another reason why I actually admire it, because a lot of that arty stuff makes sense when you think about it. And that can't actually always be said of Eva.
So maybe now the reason they're introducing music is another layer to the, you know...
Oh, surely.
So what else is it about besides music and artsy-fartsy crap?
Well, basically, I really liked the way they developed some of the characters in the previous show. It was occasionally maybe a little over-melodramatic, but overall, I think they especially integrated some of the larger like ideas and themes. Like, in the last installment, they talked a lot about artistry, about what it is to be an artist and the whole creative process, and they actually got most of that down pretty accurately. At least from my own experience as a failed writer myself, and so really, I really dug the approach of the show, because I'm normally very suspicious of Eroge adaptations, and yes, EF was originally an Eroge, and I remember watching the trailer and I thought, oh, the music is really pretty. The music is written by the guy who normally writes the music for Makoto Shinkai, and the artwork is actually, or the background artwork was also lovely as well. But I really couldn't stand the character designs at first and couldn't really stand their voices. And to this day, I actually still find that Chihiro and... what's that guy's name again? The guy who's played by the dude who plays Rocky in Claymore? I forgot his name. But one of the lead couples, their voices are incredibly annoying. They still are. But the writing and the direction was strong enough for me to overcome that. And I really like felt that it was just so emotionally aware and so well put together and coherent that I said it was my favorite show of 2007. And 2007 was a lackluster year, so maybe that's not saying a lot. And I'm actually trying to go back to watch some of the other 2007 shows like Boku Rano and Gurren Lagann to see whether I might change my opinion on that actually. But it's but in either case, it was the best one that I'd seen all the way through.
So what else are you planning on watching?
I'm also going to be watching Clannad After Story. And here's the thing. This is yet another show that I normally would be very skeptical of. Clannad in general, because it is a key, you know, key visual arts adaptation by Kyoto Animation. It's got, you know, Moe up the wazoo. That's pretty much what it's all about. And, you know, it's done by the people who did Canon and done by the people who did Air, neither of which I particularly liked. I thought they were overly sentimental, unrealistic, and, you know, fan-pandering to the Moe otaku crowd. But I was very surprised to the degree that Clannad managed to restrain itself and managed to also develop its lead male character in such a way that was not only made him not annoying, he's one of the very few, I think, worthy like male characters in the show of this type. He has his own motivations, his own backstory, and he's also quite a practical joker, which makes him very, I think, very likable.
Wait a second, but the second after story is such a nightmare for otakus. You are actually getting married with somebody.
That's right, and that's another reason why I'm really interested in it, because normally most anime is stuck in kind of a teenage warp, where basically all the characters usually are in high school or below. And so it's very...
Did you say below?
Well, because basically, okay.
Below.
Here's the point, I think. They're trying to say, well, you know, marriage life is boring. And once you get married, it's just boring after that. I can't say I agree or disagree with that. I'm not making any statements.
What? You want to say that out loud.
Right. You want to say, what do you want to say in public, Mr. Jeremy?
I think that's the mindset of most people that make anime and probably a lot of people that watch anime.
Well,
so
Actually, I do know what happens in the after story, and the reason I know is actually because I watched the Clannad movie. The Clannad movie was actually animated by Toei, who did the original version of canon back in 2002, with the one with the really ugly chins. Clannad movie actually goes through most of the after story in its second half.
And, oh, wow.
And so I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I'll just say that actually they go through adulthood, and the pain does not end in adulthood. And they the pain does not end. They have to deal with a lot of the issues of actual responsibility, especially of taking care of a child. Whoa. And it's like,
yeah, that sounds exciting. I think I want to like watch an anime about growing up, having responsibility, and raising children. Because, you know, like, real life is not really like that. And it's just such an escape to watch a show that's about things that don't remind me about real life.
Well, I'd say it still maintains its melodrama, because there's definitely some... I'll just say that it definitely a lot of tragedy involved later on. And it's actually... And I found, actually, at least in the movie, that it was relatively well handled. And it wasn't... And
if they at least had the chance of Jay Leno, that would make it a little bit funnier, right?
Well, I don't know how the movie... Actually, I honestly don't know how the movie is going to compare with how they're going to do the after story in the television series. But I still think it's really notable that anime just generally doesn't go there. And really? Doesn't really talk about stuff like that. And so I'm really eager to see how they can get out of especially the whole moe trap by basically trying to treat these characters like adults. And one of the very few animes that really talks primarily about adults, like for instance, is Monster, which is kind of a thriller about a serial killer and the doctor who saved his life as a child and is now is trying to hunt him down. That I thought was one of the very few that did that. But this is, of course, a totally different genre. This is more like a soap opera or something like that. And so we'll see how that goes. But I'm going to try to blog that as well. Anyway, I think I'm pretty much done talking. Jeremy, what looks interesting to you?
Oh, joy. Let me see. What does look interesting to me? I don't know. There's a few things that I think I'll watch, and I'll just kind of mention a few of them and maybe talk about one or two that, you know, kind of, sort of, possibly, I think I might dig. Nodame, can you say this for me, Mike? Because I never can say it right.
Cantabile.
It's music. Cantabile. Thank you very much.
It's Italian. It's a musical term for calm.
It just sounds like one of those damn Frenchy words. I don't know. Anyhow, Nodame Cantabile, Paris Hen. Yeah. I'm following up Mike after making fun of him about his slice of life stories. But actually, this is one of those shows that I actually did enjoy. I thought was pretty funny. The original Nodame. And hopefully the sequel is at least as entertaining. I won't be very hopeful that it will be because, you know, as anybody knows, even in anime, sequels tend to suck. So this is... the possibility for that, and you know, that's something I will be watching at least at the start. The other one is another comedy, romance comedy, is Seto no Hanayame.
Wait a minute,
I'm having trouble with words today,
dude.
Seto no Hanayame.
There's a Seto no Hanayame. I thought that was finished.
It's an OVA.
Oh, really?
So,
I gotta watch that.
Right.
That was my favorite comedy of 2007.
I did think this is a very funny comedy. For those of you that haven't seen it, it is basically the story of a kid who gets himself involved with a mermaid, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And in order to keep her honor from her having to reveal herself in saving him, he has to marry her. But unfortunately, he's marrying into a clan of mermaid yakuza, which has some very, very, very funny aspects and situations. Of the father really just trying to get rid of him, not really enjoying the fact that his daughter is actually marrying a human, and It's a really funny show. I really enjoyed the first one, and I look forward to see what they do with the OVA.
Oh, I'm definitely watching that too, then, because yeah. I loved Seto no Hanayome. It was really some of the funniest things I've ever seen. I blew through that entire series in like 1 week. I like watched all 25 episodes in 1 week. It was, I just couldn't stop watching it.
You said blue.
Okay. All right. Ray, do you have anything else, actually, Jeremy?
No. He's not.
I just have one other thing. I mean, there's some action shows that are coming out that I'm kind of interested in. There's not a lot of information on these many of these shows, so it's really hard to tell. Somewhat interested in Michiko to Hachin, based on its art style, looks kind of interesting, a little bit different. I am kind of interested in the story in Gare Zero. Don't like the animation style, and I think I'll pretty much leave the rest for Ray to talk about.
So yeah, Ray, why don't you go ahead and talk about what looks even marginally interesting to you this coming season?
Almost nothing, but I'll just pick off something and just talk about it, I suppose. What is it? There's an Arrow Gate adaptation. The only reason I'm talking about it is because Hirano Aya is in it.
Of course. And, we all figured. You and your Aya shrine. You know, maybe I have my Anno shrine, but your Aya shrine is like a million times bigger than my Anno shrine.
I couldn't even get an autograph because Bandai fucked up like a bitches, so I don't know what you're talking about. But no. Akane Ero ni Somaru Saka. Something about a freaking slope or some shit like that. But basically the story is about, you know, this guy at the academy and this female transfer student and who happened to be his fiance and I arranged by his family. You know, that's the synopsis. Well, I tried to look for the trailer, but all I found is the game trailer. And basically, what's there to say? It's a guy and a bunch of girls. And he's probably going to fall in love with the main girl because this is an anime, unless they go to shuffle row. Mm. There, I'm done. Because there's nothing much else to talk about it. I mean, for the animation, yeah. No, what's there to talk about? It's Arrow Gate, right? The animation seems to be as good as your typical Arrow Gate these days. But, you know, with computer animation, that's not difficult.
Well, what does that say about Hirano Aya? I thought she was trying to, like, broaden her rules or stuff like that. At least with, like,
she hasn't done a harem show before.
Well, unless you count Haruhi as one, but which is not quite, but yeah.
No, because she's like a god. Doesn't count.
Well, she is technically the main character, true. That's true.
Exactly. And if you want to talk about like other show, this called show Hyakko. Hyakko, whatever. Yeah, it has Hirano Aya in it too, and this is basically something about slice of life slapstick school comedy with four high school girls.
Ah, like Minami K.
Yeah, basically. But the other one actually had a lot of power seiyuu, like Tanaka Rie, who's gonna appear in NY New York Festival, which I guess you're going.
Well, I guess that would be the time to announce that, wouldn't it? To make my official announcement. Yes. To all of you listeners out there, I know I've refrained from saying this until it was a final and done deal. But I am actually going to be going to New York Anime Festival at the end of September, next week, actually. Probably by the time you hear this podcast, it'll just be a few days away. And I will actually be, I have a VIP ticket that'll more or less guarantee that I will get a signing from none other than Rie Tanaka. And I get to skip all the lines. And so expect a video diary, as usual, like I always do for these conventions. And, you know, more and more coverage. We're becoming a full-time con coverage operation here at Anime Diet.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, and actually, on a smaller note, might be taking a little trip with a couple people over to the glorious Mecomic-Con. Mm-hmm. Not Comic-Con, Mecomic-Con at CSUN. Oh, wow. And we'll see what that's all about, see what those crazy guys are doing over there, if, in fact, they do follow up on those promised press passes, which they really should do. It would be smart to do.
Yes.
We're like big. We're huge.
Yes, we are. We're heading to big time. And indeed.
We're all huge. And speaking of huge, the last thing I want to talk about is Chaos Gift Head.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's animated by Madhouse, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know either of these seiyus because I probably just don't know the English spelling, so screw that. Basically, it's about some sort of high school again. And some kid and finds some gruesome murder on his way home. More mysterious event happens and more murders and, you know, dealing with reality and all that. It's just looking at the trailer, it has something about with internet, a little bit science fiction, a little bit other stuff. Didn't show any gruesome stuff. Mm-hmm. But I will say the concept seems to be intriguing enough, I guess. You know, because he's supposedly gonna have delusions. And I was thinking, what, did he have the internet, like cyber-induced drugs, like in Ghost in the Shell? I have no idea. Yeah, basically, and I guess there's a murder behind that. I hope that he doesn't wield a chainsaw. Mm-hmm. But, you know, pretty much it's adopted by a visual novel, not an arrow game. Mm-hmm. So they could be good, it could be good, or it could be corny.
Yeah, it could be Higurashi, or it could be something much, much worse. So, yeah.
Or it could be School Days.
Or it could be School Days. That's a great comparison. I agree. Exactly. Though, of course, if it's School Days, at least I want a new internet mem to replace a nice boat.
Oh, yes. Right.
Yes. But in either case, so is that everything that we want to talk about?
Somebody's going to Carl the Kroganino Lime Barrel, right? This is about a boy, a mecha, struggling with life.
Yes. And apparently that girl and that mecha could cost him his life, according to the tagline. It's a Gonzo animated mecha show. It could either become Dragonaut or it could become Bokurano. We don't know. The concept seems somewhat promising. Matt says he would be interested in covering it. So he might be the one blogging. He needs a new occupation after Code Geass ends at the end of the season. So that might be his domain. He'll be master of that domain for a little while. And yes, I made a Seinfeld 90s reference. Hooray. But,
hooray. That's old. It's master of his castle, by the way.
Yeah.
I even scored you on that.
I think that's the original expression, but I'm very sure that in Seinfeld, it was master of his domain. Yeah.
Fine. I do have... it's actually two references to Seinfeld within this podcast. They're kind of like little... Easter egg. So if you can find them, pick them out, and send them to us, we'll send you a wonderful prize of pocket lint from my anime cosplay costumes.
Yes.
Hey, he's underpants!
Yes.
Yes.
Quite. For those of you that are into that sort of thing, which I doubt, I hope, are not me. I did want to mention one other show that I did fail to mention that the poster for looks decent for what it is. The storyline seems like it might be interesting, but we'll have to see. I really don't know much else about it, but it's Kurozuka. And it's basically about this guy named Kuro, who basically runs into the mountains after losing his brother, whatever that means. And he meets a strange and beautiful woman. Okay? Her name is Kuro Mitsu. Okay? Kuro Mitsu. Not hard to forget the character's names in this, so... Fairly simple so far, but apparently she has a dark secret. Ooh. She is unable to die. Mm. Ooh. Uh-oh. It's like the reverse version of Highlander. So, I don't know. Kind of has me a little bit interested here. We'll see. But apparently she's lived for thousands of years. He becomes infatuated with her and then, you know, discovers a secret. So let's see what happens. I don't know. This could... Has a high probability of suckness, but it, you know.
He says he learns that he is unable to die, at least according to that.
No, actually, from the sources that I'm reading, and like I said, there's very little information about it. Uh-huh. It seems to appear that the woman that he meets is the one that's unable to die. Uh-huh. And he's basically just discovering her past or whatever at some point, so... And trying to figure out why he's so strangely attracted to an incredibly ancient woman. Mm. So, I don't know, maybe it's an anime about some guys like an older woman.
Well, at least is she hot?
Well, strange but beautiful.
Ah, mm-hmm. One of those, yes. Yeah. I guess that appeals to that kind of fetish. But, yeah. But in either case, I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap up this 26th episode of Anime Diet Radio. And I'm your host, Michael Huang.
And this is Raymond Hugh from Taipei, a nice and wonderful city, as always.
Right.
And this is Jeremy from Redondo Beach. Good night, guys.
Good night.
See ya.